Welcome to Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal, bringing you fiction, nonfiction, and other readings with a local connection. This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and the opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. I'm Joanne, and today I will be reading from The Summer Club by Hannah McKinnon, and it is episode 6. But after work, there was more trouble. Molly, the tennis pro, called for an emergency camp staff meeting. Darcy lined up with the others as Vince, Molly, and her father, Garnet, gathered everyone at the picnic tables. Their expressions were grim. "All three new kayaks are missing," Molly announced to the group. "Does anyone know anything about this?" There was silence, followed by a flood of murmurs, but no one offered up any information. Blaine, one of the lifeguards, was whispering something to Spencer, but Darcy couldn't hear. Lily leaned in. "They were there yesterday because I had to drag the kayaks up on the beach after swim time." Darcy tried to focus on what Lily was saying and not her old coach's golf hat as Vince stood in front of them. Her father had given him that hat after her last tournament, right after she won. She had one just like it, shoved in the back of her closet back at home, right next to the trophy she'd won. Ashley Riley raised her hand like she was in third grade. "Maybe someone borrowed them and they're banked somewhere up the lake." Everyone nodded like she'd come up with the right answer. "We've already searched the shore on both sides," Molly informed them. "Unfortunately, before this happened, a paddleboard had disappeared over the weekend, along with paddles." Vince cleared his throat. "What appeared to have been one missing piece of equipment is starting to look like a string of thefts." He let his gaze settle in as his gaze roamed over the counselors. Darcy looked past him to her father. Like everyone else, camp was under his jurisdiction, right down to the last oar. "If you saw anything or know anything, please come see us," he said. "These are expensive club items, and this is a serious matter." Given the day her father was having, she was almost afraid to ask if he sorted things out for Adam. When she found him in his office, she had her answer. He looked like he wanted to punch something. "Apparently, Mr. Delancey decided that Adam is only cleared to work in the kitchen." Her father was fuming. "What? I thought you were in charge." She looked around. "Where's Adam now?" "He was so upset, I took him home." "Poor Adam." "Dad, this makes no sense. Did something happen in the office?" "No. Jane loves having Adam help out. She keeps telling me what a wonder he is with the accounts." Adam had always been a numbers guy. Since he was little, he would sit in the shopping cart at the checkout line and predict, within a dollar, what the cost of all the groceries would be before the cashier even rang them up. When Darcy needed help on her pre-calc homework, Adam was the only one in the family who could give it. Someone could tell him their birth date, and in less than 30 seconds, he'd calculate their present age to the minute. Darcy would bet her life he was better in the office than anyone at this stupid club. "Why would Mr. Delancey do this?" Her father shook his head. "He told Jane that member accounts are private business and non-salaried employees shouldn't have access." "Do you believe that?" Again, she already knew the answer. It was the thing that got Darcy's hackles up the most. So many people took Adam at face value. They saw a lanky, shy kid who didn't make eye contact, who really spoke to people outside his family or talked rapidly and without pause when he did. They assessed the averted gaze and the social awkwardness and did their own math to sum him up. Darcy knew better than anyone. She'd been watching people do it to him her whole life. Now Mr. Delancey was, too. Her father stood up. "It doesn't matter what Dick Delancey thinks. I'm going to have a word with him and fix this. Don't worry." This time, Darcy didn't find solace in her father's resolve. Gone were the days she believed her father could fix things as easily as he once did her scraped knee or Adam's toppled ice cream cone. One thing she learned that year was that people disappointed you left and right, sometimes the ones you cared most about. Dad, just because you're president doesn't mean you can fix everything. Her father looked like she'd smacked him. Darcy, this has nothing to do with my position. Mayhaven is about welcoming families, and what Dick did isn't in line with that. Here he was again, towing the club line. How can you keep defending this place if this is how Adam is treated? Hang on, honey. Dick DeLancey does not represent Mayhaven. Doesn't he? She snorted. God, her dad had such a blind spot. He's the chairman. Of course he does. No, her father insisted. I do. So do the board members like Mrs. Babcock, who loved both you kids since you were little, and Mosimo and his team, and the pros who instructed you guys and all the other kids here over the years. Darcy flinched when he mentioned the pros, but her father was too impassioned to notice. This is a place where everyone belongs. Darcy looked at her father and almost felt sorry for him. What if we don't want to belong? Before he could say anything more, she turned and stormed out. This was his fault, too, for being so naive, for not seeing what was right under his nose. She pushed through the back door and was about to head for the parking lot when she heard a burst of laughter. Spencer DeLancey was walking up the hill from the lake with other guards. Well, well, well. What was it her mother always said? Apples don't fall far. Fuming, she strode up to him. Got a minute? The other lifeguards halted, looks of amusement on their faces. Sure, what's up? Darcy ignored them. I need to talk to you, like, now. Spencer followed her to the bench in the shade and sat down. He flipped his blonde hair out of his blue eyes and leaned in. God, he was beautiful. Something wrong? She would not be swayed. You know my brother Adam? Spencer said, sure. He got a job in the club office this summer, but he was just let go. Oh, that sucks. Spencer looked confused. What does that have to do with me? Your dad was the one who said he doesn't belong there. My dad? He fidgeted on the seat next to her. Why would he care? Good question. Spencer needed to know what his father did. Adam is really smart, and he could do that job better than anyone with an accounting degree. So I'm just trying to figure out why the board chairman thinks it's okay to stick him in the back of the kitchen, like he's hiding him away. Her tone was high and ripe with anger, and she knew she was probably embarrassing herself, but she couldn't stop. What your dad did is not fair. Spencer didn't say anything, but to his credit, he didn't get up and walk away either. Look, Darcy, I don't know anything about this, but I can see how angry you are. He reached over and put a hand on hers, and that was all it took. It's not right, she said again, staring at their entwined hands. So you should talk to someone about that, but I do not think that someone is me. You're right, her voice broke. I shouldn't have bothered you with this. Spencer wasn't the guy to go after, but she was so mad at her father, at his father, at the stupid club. She swiped at her eyes where, to her horror, tears were starting to pool. Sometimes I get protective of my brother. It's okay, he shrugged. My sister and I barely talk. Am's lucky to have a sister who sticks up for him. Darcy looked up at Spencer. He seemed genuine. Maybe being a jerk didn't run in the family. Hey, Spence, as they were being interrupted, you coming to the beach or not? They both turned to see Ashley Riley striding across the grass. She was wearing a red bikini top and a short white skirt. When she saw Darcy, she glared at her. Neither girl said hello. I'll be down in a bit, Spencer said, his gaze returning to Darcy's. Darcy couldn't believe it. Apparently neither could Ashley. Well, I can't stay for long, so if you want to hang. Got it. His tone was as cool as his expression, and he stayed right where he was, next to Darcy. Ashley did not budge, either. Darcy could feel the vibration of her impatience as she stood behind them. You can go if you want, Darcy began, trying to sound casual, but in her head, please stay, please stay, please stay. Spencer shook his head. To Ashley, he called, I'll catch you later. Whatever. Ashley stomped away from them down the hill toward the lake. Spencer flipped his hair out of his eyes like a fly had been buzzing between them. Sorry, you were saying? Darcy was so shocked by what just happened, she forgot what she'd been saying. Nothing. We're good. Okay, cool. He stood up and she felt her heart leap up off the bench with him. "Actually, wait. There is something," she swallowed. I owe you an apology for lighting into you like that." Spencer smirked. "What?" This was not funny. Even if he just sent Ashley Riley on her way, Darcy had still made a complete fool of herself. She could not end on this note. "You did light into me," he said, but his expression remained amused. "It's kind of cute, actually." Darcy looked away, trying to hide her blush. God, why couldn't she control her emotions better? "My dad said he'll figure it out," she said, switching the subject. "Thanks for letting me vent." Spencer waved a hand like it was nothing. "We've all got to blow off steam sometimes. Look, my dad can be tough, but he's a good guy. I'm sure there was some kind of misunderstanding." He looked back at the clubhouse. "Both of our fathers are in the charge of this place. It can be cool sometimes, but it can also be a pain in the arse for us, right?" So true. It had never occurred to her that she'd have something in common with Spencer, and yet here it was. "My dad acts like this place is heaven on earth," she confided. Darcy let her gaze roam out over the course, past the first tee box illuminated in late afternoon sun, a spot she used to feel so sure of things when she stood up there, driver in hand. "Don't stretch so much, Birch. It's summer." Spencer held out his hand, and she let him pull her up from the bench. "Look around. Let yourself have some fun." Darcy forced a smile. "Right." As she watched him walk away, Darcy had to wonder if Spencer got her. Despite this messed-up club and her crazy family, it was summer. He was right. She did deserve some friend. And maybe it would be with him. Next chapter, Ned. Ned was not a man of violence, but he wanted to kill Dick DeLancey. Who the hell did he think he was going behind Ned's back while he was away at a meeting and pulling his son from his new job? Ingrid was working late again, and it was well after dinner when she finally came home. Ned had already cooked, cleaned the kitchen, and walked Fritzy. He tried Dick DeLancey both at home and on his cell, to no avail. He'd asked both kids multiple times to go for a swim with him in the pool. He needed to unwind. For the first time in ages, Darcy was in a happy mood, but she stayed on the phone, giggling with Lily all evening. Adam, who still wanted to be left alone, was watching car videos. "I need to get back to the office," he kept saying. "I only got through half of the invoices." "I know, buddy," Ned said. "I'm trying to fix the misunderstanding." It wasn't true. The only misunderstanding was Dick DeLancey's sense of authority. Ned knew from Neiman Shrive that Dick was the only board member who opposed Adam's hiring in favor of a friend he wanted the job to go to. He also knew Dick was uncomfortable around Adam. He saw it in the way Dick addressed Darcy and Ingrid, but always looked right past Adam as if he weren't there. And in the way Dick looked at Adam on a rare occasion he did, well, it was time Dick was enlightened about a few things. Ingrid found him pacing up in their room, trying Dick's cell phone. She looked as exhausted as he felt. "Have you eaten?" he asked. Bad news on an empty stomach was a deadly combo for Ingrid. She kicked off her shoes. "I just want to get out of these work clothes and into bed. After all those showings, the Boston couple is waffling on the treehouse. Maybe the other agents were right. This house is impossible to sell." "I'm sorry," he said. Ingrid had been killing herself on that sale. She tugged open her closet door and stood staring into it like she'd forgotten what she was doing there. "It's been a long day." Ned hated that what he had to say would make it even longer. "Honey, something happened at the club today." He went and closed the bedroom door. Ingrid was a rat terrier with a bone when she sensed anything wrong with her kids. "What happened? Was it about Adam?" "It was Adam." She did that, too, drew conclusions without even letting him finish a sentence. But damned if she weren't usually right. "Dick DeLancey doesn't think he should work in the office. He assigned Adam to kitchen work only." "What?" Her outrage was predictable. "Why not? Based on what information?" "I haven't been able to reach him. The only information I have is that he's an a-hole." Ned flopped on the bed. "Damn it, Ned, this is the first job Adam has liked. And it got him out of the house every day. You have to get it back for him," she looked at him imploringly. "For all of us." "I will. Don't worry." She rummaged irritably through the dresser drawer and yanked out her pajamas. Are you sure about that? Ned did not like the doubt in her tone. Of course I'm sure. Then how did Adam lose the job to begin with? She shook her head. I don't know, Ned. I know you love that place, but the board seems out of control lately. They put all these crazy expectations on you, but are never supportive of changes you try to make. This is just one more example. She paused in her outrage to undress. Ned was instantly distracted. His eyes traveled up her legs to the curve of her stomach, to her breast, and paused there. This is your family going after. He sensed that she was referring to some invisible line between them. Were they not on the same side of this? No one is going after anyone, honey, he said. And it's not us against them. Adam belongs at the club just as much as anyone else. Ygritte snorted, just the way Darcy had in his office earlier. It gave him a bad feeling. Don't you believe that? Ned, she tugged her nightgown over her head, and her lovely breast disappeared. Mayhaven has changed, or maybe we have. I don't know, she sighed. I just hope you can figure this out as quickly as you seem to think you can. He waited as she stalked down the hall to see the kids. Ygritte was a good mother. Here she was, working her tail off at the realty office and still holding their household together. If Adam didn't have a job to go to and insisted on staying home, he knew it would make her feel like she had to, too. She worked too hard for Ned to let that happen. When Ygritte returned, she had a suspicious look on her face. Darcy's in a good mood. What happened? Ned smiled ruefully. Damned if he knew. Darcy used to be in a good mood most of the time. I'm worried about her. Her moods are all over the place this summer. I think she should talk to someone. Ygritte had been suggesting they'd find Darcy a therapist all summer. Ned had thought she was getting ahead of herself. Teenage emotions were about as stable as an electrical storm. But lately, he had to wonder if Ygritte were right. I think she should talk to a college recruiter. Maybe that would get her back into the game. Ned! What? College is going to pay for itself, and that was her ticket. Stop, please. If she's ever going back to golf, it has to be her idea. Ygritte pulled the covers back and climbed into bed next to him. We may have to figure something else out for college. Ned rolled on his back and stared at the spot on the ceiling that probably needed to be repainted. I never should have had that damn pool redone. We have to do something. It was turning into a frog pond. It was true. They inherited the pool with the house, and it had been a crumbling, leaking mess ever since. But the pool was a small price to pay. They afforded a house, albeit humble, in a good town with good schools. It was worth every sacrifice he made at work to make that happen. Ygritte, you know I'll do anything for our family. Yes, honey, she propped herself up on the elbow. I also know we don't always see things the same way. You like to tell me to be more positive, and sometimes I want to tell you to be more realistic. Ned knew what his family thought of him, that he was sentimental, head in the clouds. But the world was a dark place, too. He pushed away darkness since childhood, and now, as a father, it was his job to keep it from his children. I'm trying, Ygritte. He sank back in the pillows, and she rested her head on his chest. Sometimes I wish I could be as optimistic as you are, she said. If Adam isn't working, there's no way I can leave him sitting home alone all summer. Ned pulled her closer against him. It's not fair. When the kids were babies, they struck a deal. She wanted to stay at home, and he would work. When she went back into realty, they knew it would be an adjustment. You don't have to work, he said carefully, if you don't want to. Things were tight, but he didn't want her spreading herself too thin. Ygritte sat up and looked down. But I do. I need to. For myself. Her eyes were so green, just like Darcy's, and so full of determination. Then we'll figure this out. Not long after Ygritte turned out the light, her soft snores filled the room. Normally, the cadence of them lulled Ned to sleep. But that night, he tossed and turned, and the weight of his whole world sitting on his shoulders. First thing the next morning, Ned headed straight for the pro shop. Sure enough, Dick Delancey's reserve time slot was written in. He wasn't supposed to do that, but there it was. Beautiful today, Hey, boss, Vince was all smiles and jocularity, but it didn't have its usual effect. Been a while since I've seen you put the A game to good use. You heading out for a round? Not today, Ned said glumly. He hadn't played yet that summer. It was the irony of being president of a golf club. Vince shook his head. I don't know. You've been going nonstop. If you change your mind, I'll grab you a cart and set you up with some lunch. He wished Ingrid was there. This was one of the reasons Ned loved this place so much. People like Vince and the convivial spirit. Thanks, Vince. Has Dick come in yet? You just missed him. Vince nodded out the window toward the first tee box. He's been hooking them lately. Real shame, Vince winked. It wasn't a huge Delancey fan either. It was well known that Dick never tipped the pros or the caddies. Real shame indeed. Outside, Ned found Dick shoving his driver into his golf bag angrily. Tough drive? Just warming up, Dick said, fixing him with his Cheshire cat smile. What can I help you with, Ned? All right, then, he skipped the niceties. You pulled Adam out of the office? Dick didn't hesitate. I did, nor did he offer apology or explanation. That wasn't your place, Ned said. What was the reason? Oh, come on, Ned. We both know our kids have privileges here because of us. Ned would not allow himself to be sucked into any fraternizing. Dick, you must know the board posted the part-time office jobs themselves. Adam applied, and he's good at it. Is there some kind of budgetary issue I'm unaware of? Adam would do that job for free, but Ned wasn't about to offer that just yet. Dick scuffed the ground with his toe. Ned really wished he wouldn't do that. Your son is a good kid, but there is no room for error with member accounts. Has there ever been an error? Dick didn't say anything, and Ned knew then for sure this was about something else. The board and I don't think it's appropriate that a kid has access to confidential member information. Accounts and charges are private, so are methods of payment. Ned didn't say anything. He's just a kid, Dick said finally. Not just any kid, Ned said. Come on, Ned. No, you come on, Dick. That's what this is all about, isn't it? Dick held out his hand. I never said that. You didn't have to. Let's not take it there, Birch. This is unnecessary. You already did. This isn't about confidentiality or any of that nonsense. This is about Adam, because he's on the spectrum, and you don't understand it or don't like it, and I can't say for sure, but this is about you, Dick. You can take this to the board and file a complaint, but it won't change anything. Dick was not going to budge. If Ned took this to the board, it would take even more time and draw more attention to Ned's position. Maybe, Ned realized, that what was Dick had wanted all along. Your job is up for review this fall, Ned. Some might say that gifting your son a highly sensitive position was an overstep on your part. I'm happy to open this for further review if you insist. Fist clenched, Ned watched Dick Delancey motor off in the car. It was little solace to see him stop a merely 50 feet away to play his crappy drive. Back in the office, he found a file sitting on his desk, affixed with a note from Jane. New member applicants. This was the last thing he cared to deal with right now. But he needed some good news. After his robust membership drive that summer, Ned hoped for around 20 new applications, but he'd taken 15. Hell, he'd take 10. Let there be at least 10, he whispered as he flipped open the file and scanned the list. It didn't take him long. There were 4 measly applications. When he got to the third one, he slammed his fist on the desk. Stan and Josephine Crenshaw, Maple Drive. New chapter, Flick. There was a new membership board meeting that afternoon. Normally, this would mean nothing to Flick, but Mosimo got a call in the kitchen. The meeting had run so late that Mr. Birch had asked for lunch to be brought in. Me? Flick asked. He really did not want to go in there. He did not want to overhear anything. Let his mother and Stan get the email or call or whatever embossed fancy stationery was sent to the house, if they were accepted. All it boiled down to was the fact that not everyone in the house would win. Good news for his mother meant bad news for him. 4 days, his mother had talked about nothing except their pending application. Worse, she's gone shopping for new outfits to wear to the club, and they didn't look anything like what the other women at the club wore. That morning before work, she cornered him. So, has Mr. Birch given you any indication? Mom, I'm just in the kitchen and snack bar, kid, he reminded her. If it's not about cheeseburgers or beurre blanc sauce, it doesn't apply to me. Josie had not been dissuaded. Work hard this week, and if you see Mr. Birch, go out of your way to smile. She pinched his cheek. You're such a gorgeous smile. Flick doubted very much Mr. Birch would say anything to him, and in fact, he prayed he would not. It would be awkward. Plus, he had very mixed feelings about his mother and Stan joining. Not only did he not like the other teens who belonged there, but he had to admit it. Bad as he felt for saying so, it didn't seem like a place Stan and his mother would really fit in. Josie was a whole lot younger than the other moms with his kids his age. Sure, she kept herself in shape, but she favored blingy jewelry and animal prints and tight-fitting clothes. He'd bet his life she did not own any monogram sweaters or lobster print skirts. And let's not get started on Stan. Stan's idea of dining room attire was purple satin shirt unbuttoned down to the tangle of golden necklaces and his abundant chest hair. Flick shivered, just imagining him seated next to Mrs. Babcock in the dining room, bellowing, "Pass the hot sauce!" "Knock first," Mosimo said to him now, as he helped Flick load the service cart. "The board members don't like to be interrupted." Resigned, Flick pushed the cart down the hall and knocked. When it opened, Bitsy Babcock stared up at him through her thick glasses. "Well, well, well, look at what the cat dragged in. How delicious!" She ushered him inside. The meeting was in deep progress, and no one besides Bitsy noticed him or the food, or seemed very happy, for that matter. "Sit it where everyone can reach, dear," Bitsy whispered, pointing to the center of the table around which the board members were seated. Besides Mr. Delancey and Mr. Birch, who sat at opposite ends, Flick didn't recognize many faces. They all looked to be in the locked in some kind of debate. Neiman Shrive's staid expression flickered to life at the sight of food, and he snatched a sandwich from the platter before Flick even set it down. No one else so much as blinked. Attention in the room was thick, and Flick wanted to beat it out of there as fast as he could. We cannot ignore the fact that membership numbers are at a historic low, and if all we've got are four applicants, then we need to consider all four, a man was saying. Mr. Delancey threw his pencil on the table irritably. Forget, consider, I say we just take them. Flick's heart skipped. He could already hear his mother shrieking with glee. Agreed, said another. We need the funding for operations. A rousing discussion erupted, and Mr. Birch stood up. That may be the case, but Mayhaven has always had a selective process in place. No need to abandon that. Flick was just finishing filling water glasses and about to excuse himself when Mrs. Babcock piped up. Ned, you seem hesitant, Bitsy said. Please tell us, is there an applicant in this particular that you're concerned about? The water pitcher in Flick's hand slipped. For the first time since he entered the room, Mr. Birch's gaze swung his way. Flick knew exactly which application Mr. Birch was concerned about. He steadied the pitcher, whispered an apology, and ducked out. Everything go okay? Mosimo asked. Despite his armpit stains, he nodded. There was no reason to be upset. Flick never wanted to join in the first place. Now he could keep his job. But then he thought of Josie. His mother had worked hard raising him as a single parent. She wanted this badly, and whether she fit in or not, that was up to her to figure out. The more Flick thought about it, she deserved to be there as much as any of those pearl-clutching members he served each day. Even more. A wave of fresh doubt about Mr. Birch washed over him. The guy had been so nice, even after the way Stan treated him. But Flick was wrong about Mr. Birch. Was this payback for the stuff going on between the neighbors? Mosimo's booming voice interrupted his thoughts. You're scheduled for the snack shop. Don't forget to replenish the condiments and paper goods. Yes? Yes, Flick was on his way to the pantry when he stopped. Excuse me, Mossimo. The chef looked up from the pot of bisque he was stirring. Mr. Birch, he's a good guy, isn't he? Mossimo frowned. Why do you ask? Instantly, Flick regretted opening his mouth. Mossimo was his boss, not his friend. But then he pictured his mother's expression if she found out that they didn't get in. Could Flick work in a place where his own family wasn't welcome? My parents applied for membership, he blurted out. Mossimo flicked off the gas range and turned to Flick. You're gonna join Mayhaven? That's the thing, I'm not sure they are going to get in. The chef stared thoughtfully into the pot of soup. Flick worried he'd overstep. Mayhaven is a lovely place, Mossimo said. He gestured to the swinging door separating the dining room from the kitchen. Their world is on that side of the door, and our world is on this side. Today, you are on this side, he shrugged. Tomorrow, who knows? To answer your question, Mr. Birch is a good man. He has a vision for this place. This place, however, is a bubble, he yelled out his arms. Yes? Flick nodded. Mossimo returned to his pot. It's a beautiful bubble, though. No? In the pantry, Flick thought about what the chef had said. Mayhaven was a bubble. Just walking through the front door each day, Flick felt transported. And the beauty of the place, the insane sunsets and mountain views, the glossy stretch of lake water when the last swimmer exited for the day. Well, if there was anywhere prettier, Flick had not yet been. Sure, there were the cliché haves and have-nots, the members and the staff. Just look at the cars in the lot. But up here at the club, you felt like the world was okay. Hell, it wasn't just okay, it was grand. From the clink of ice in a tawny glass of bourbon to the fairways as green as the money they played at them. These people were unconcerned by every day. It wasn't their fault, it was the bubble. He loaded a crate with paper goods for the snack shack when Mossimo poked his head in the pantry. Mr. Flick. Flick set the crate down. Mossimo paused. One more thing. We are in the service industry, and it's not just a job, it's an honor. Flick had heard all this before. Us and them, servers and members. Yeah, I know. We need them. No, no. Mossimo shook his head. They need us. They need us. Flick repeated it silently to himself as he scooped melted ice cream and poured lemonades at the snack shack. It was a reversal from what he thought the chef meant, and he liked the sound of it. He liked it a lot. When a mother with a screaming toddler asked him to re-cook a cheeseburger, medium, not well, Flick told himself that this mother needed him. When a family left a mess of ketchup-covered napkins and spilled soda on a picnic table, he repeated the mantra when he picked up their trash and wiped the surface clean. And when Spencer Delancey and the crew of his friends lined up at the shack window, chest puffed and bare, he screamed it in his head. Hey, man, Blaine said. So, we need some dogs and burgers to take out on the boat. And drinks, one of them added, turning to watch a girl in a bikini walk by. Don't forget the drinks. Flick really hoped they weren't about to ask him to serve them beer again. Instead, he wrote down their orders, keeping his face neutral. Okay, he said, reading the order aloud to Blaine because he didn't want them coming back. 3 cheeseburgers, 1 burger, no cheese, 2 hot dogs, 4 fries. In 6 Coronas, Flick looked up. It was not Spencer Delancey this time. It was one of his floppy-haired wingmen, Russ. You know I can't do that, man, Flick said, looking him dead in the eye. Russ leaned in, because you're a pussy. Flick swallowed, because you're not 21 and I'll lose my job. So get a job at McDonald's. What's the difference? Russ laughed along with the others, Spencer included. What did Darcy see in this guy? Come on, do me a solid and I'll do one for you. He pulled a folded bill from his phone case and stuck it in the plastic tip jar. Flick could see the Benjamin. Flick didn't want to help Rush out any more than he wanted to owe him anything. He stared at the $100 bill. Sorry, man. Russ's face went dark. He was losing the argument in front of his friends. You kidding me? What the? Hey, come on. To Flick's surprise, it was Spencer who'd spoken up. Maybe Flick was wrong about him, but no. He's not worth it, man. Spencer clapped Russ on the back like he'd win next time. You're right, he's a P. Spencer jammed his hand inside the tip jar, whisked the $100 bill out, and gave it back to Russ. The smug look on his face made Flick want to leap over the counter and pop him. But a father with two kids got in line, and the guys gave way. As he fried their burgers, Flick watched them head to the dock out of the corner of his eye. Only Blaine stuck around. Flip wrapped all the food neatly, even though he wanted to spit in it, repeating what Mosimo had said. He watched Blaine carry the order to a slip where a sleek blue speedboat idled loudly. Spencer stood at the wheel. Blaine had barely boarded when Spencer threw the boat in reverse. The sound of the engine rumbled across the beach. Flick didn't know a damn thing about boats, but he knew the rules. Motorized watercraft were supposed to taxi in and out at low speed, but the second Spencer put it in gear, they took off. One of the guys stumbled backwards. Someone's hat blew off into the water. Their laughter carried on the wind as the boat tore out of the marina. The wake churned the water, lifted the dock, and left all the other boats rocking wildly against their moorings. They need us, Flick repeated. Only Mosimo's words did little to lift his spirits this time. As he drove home, Flick's thinking had skidded back to doubt. The people at Mayhaven weren't his people, and they never would be. It made him miss home and Mateo and his old neighborhood even more. In the driveway, he parked behind Stan's car, Lambo, as Stan and all his genius had nicknamed it. What would Spencer and Russ and those a-holes think if he pulled up in that thing tomorrow? Flick allowed himself to revel in the image. He bet even that flashy attention-getter Ashley Riley would hustle over to check it out. Russ could take this $100 bill and shove it where the sun didn't shine. The one face he couldn't conjure was Darcy's. What would she think if he rolled in a Lamborghini? He was pretty sure she'd be less than impressed. Maybe that was a good thing. Darcy was real, even if she was the daughter of the president of the bubble. When he finally walked through the front door, his mother was waiting for him, breathless. It's unbelievable! Oh, no, she'd gotten the news. He'd have to lie and tell her he heard there was hundreds of applicants, anything to soften the blow. It was for the best. She'd come to see that. Look, Mom, who cares about what those people think? What people? She cocked her head. Wait, you don't know, do you? She turned and shouted to Stan, planted in his usual spot in front of the TV. He doesn't know, Stan, so tell him. She turned back to Flit. We got in, she cried, jumping up and down. The new member dinner is this Friday. Then, oh, honey, we need to get you a suit. Flick stood in the foyer as Josie spun away and down the hall, still talking. It was official. He was a member of the bubble. Up in his room, he texted Mateo. Bad news. We got in. A few minutes later, Mateo replied, Welcome to the dark side. I mean, the white side. LOL. Flick wanted to tell him, No, man, it's not like that. But he couldn't think of a single member of color at Mayhaven. Not A1. He texted back, Not so white anymore. I guess not. What about the girl? What about her? What did she say? Flick wondered if Darcy knew. He seemed to be on her good side again, after the other day with Adam, but he hadn't crossed paths with her since. Didn't tell her. Doesn't she work there? Yeah, but haven't seen her. Beginning to wonder if this girl exists. Flick went to the window and looked outside. There in the backyard next door, as if summoned by his thoughts, was the entire Birch family. Mr. Birch and his wife stood by a smoking grill. Adam was floating on a yellow raft, and there, sitting at the edge of the pool, was Darcy. She wore a white bikini and was dangling her leg in the water. For a second, Flick was tempted to take a photo and send it to Mateo, proof of life, but it felt wrong. At that moment, Darcy looked up. Flick hopped back behind the curtain. Surely the houses weren't close enough for her to see him standing up there. He waited, then peeked out again. Now she was talking to her brother. Flick allowed himself to watch as she swung her legs back and forth in the water. They were strong and suntanned and lovely. As lovely as the other day when she kissed him on the cheek and he watched them carry her across the grass away from him. A longing stirred inside him. It was still staring when Darcy looked up again. This time she waved. He went to his phone off the bed to text Mateo back, but it dinged before he got there. Meet me outside later? It was Darcy. Flick didn't hesitate. When? New chapter. Darcy. Her parents were losing it that summer. All her mother could talk about was the treehouse property she couldn't sell. Darcy had bigger issues, and so did Adam. She was beginning to think her dad did, too. She was still upset from what happened that afternoon. After camp, she bumped into the junior golf team. All summer, Darcy had been strategic about avoiding them. Camp ended at 3:30, and the team's daily practice started at 4. Sometimes she saw one of them from a distance, and she'd wave before ducking in the opposite direction. So far, it had worked, until that afternoon when she'd run into Hallie Majors outside the locker room. Hallie was a former teammate, one division beneath her. Word was that with Darcy off the team, Hallie had moved into her spot. She was good, but she wasn't that good. "Hey, we miss you," Hallie said, her big blue eyes searching Darcy's face. Darcy knew they all wondered why she quit so suddenly. "Yeah, I miss you too," Darcy lied. She was caught off guard by Hallie's red and white blue team visor, just like she used to wear. "I figured it was time to play something new, you know, for college applications and all." Hallie regarded her curiously. Everyone who knew Darcy knew her golf ranking was enough to get her into a good school. "Oh, that's cool. So what are you playing?" "Playing?" Darcy stared blankly at her, instantly regretting what she said. I haven't decided yet. Maybe tennis." Then she abruptly excused herself, saying she had to go find a camper. On the way out, she couldn't help but glance over at the driving range. Practice was starting. Three carts were lined up at the edge of the range, ready to go. There was Vince talking with Hallie and a couple other girls from the team. When Vince rested his hand on Hallie's shoulder, the way he used to with her, Darcy pulled her gaze away and hurried for her car. Now, she was stuck in her backyard pool, listening to her parents argue about the club. All summer, her father had complained that nobody was using the new pool. So what happened when she and Adam finally used it? Her parents burned dinner on the grill and fought. God, she could not wait for college. The worst was they were pretending not to fight, which no parent anywhere could ever pull off. It was a joke, really. They'd already spent the last couple days arguing about Adam's office job, which her father had sworn he'd get back, and so far hadn't. Adam refused to go back to the club until he did. Every night at dinner was the same monologue. "I have to finish the July billing with Jane. It has to be mailed out Friday." And then there was a problem with the Brennan's account. They were double charged at the restaurant. I don't know if Jane told them about it. The kid was hyper-focused on a job, but he didn't realize he was probably never getting back. Her mother was mad at her father. The whole thing was a mess. But today, good news. There was something new to argue about. "So the Crenshaws are in?" her mother sounded amused, which seemed to bother her father even more. "The Crenshaw Creevies," her father corrected her morosely. "And yes, they're in." "I thought you said over your dead body." "I say a lot of things about my job, Ingrid," her father said flatly. "In case you can't tell, things aren't exactly going as I planned." "What about my job?" Adam started. In unison, both parents replied, "Dad is working on it." Liars. Darcy had only been half listening till the mention of the neighbor's new membership. It was the only interesting thing her parents had said in days. She glanced across the fence at the neighbors. They were kind of crazy, no doubt, from the RV to the scarecrow shooting to their loud parties and the pot smoke. They were nothing like the other families on Maple Drive, which Darcy was beginning to think might not be such a bad thing. Darcy had only ever seen Flick's mom at a distance, but she was memorable. Mrs. Crenshaw was tiny, with wild, dark hair and tight, bright-colored clothes. Vivid compared to Ingrid, with her shapeless dishwater wardrobe. But whatever. If you had it, flaunt it, as Lily always said. Except when it came to Ashley Riley, who did nothing but flaunt it. As for the stepdad, Darcy could understand her father's angst. The guy was huge in all ways. Huge vehicles, huge money, hello, orange Lamborghini. Huge parties and huge rudeness. Flick didn't seem to like Stan much, was the vibe she'd gotten. But as different as the Crenshaw Creevies may have been, at least they weren't boring. The same could not be said for the club. From the faded chintz curtains to the old people in their starched shirts to the tired chicken cordon bleu on the menu, Mayhaven was like a time capsule, permanently frozen in the boring era. Nothing there ever changed. If the neighbors were going to be members, then maybe, finally, things might get shaken up. Her eyes were drawn to a flutter of movement in one of the second-floor windows. Darcy looked up and saw Flick. Was he spying on her? She sucked in her stomach and waved. And then, because everything else was already going wrong, she decided to text him. Just after midnight, Darcy slipped downstairs and out the back door. The pool surface danced as clouds drifted across the face of the moon, and she hurried barefoot through the back gate. Her heart pounded as she approached the RV. It was almost too dark to see, but every now and then the moonlight on the ground shifted with the sky. Flick, she called softly. Over here. Her eyes darted at the side of the RV where a person stood in the shadows, and she exhaled. It had been her idea to meet up, but now she wondered if it was a mistake. Too late, she told herself as she took a deep breath and walked up to where he stood. Hi, she said, hoping her shaky voice didn't betray her. You showed. He sounded like he'd been unsure, and it emboldened her. So, are you giving me a tour or what? The RV, the source of her father's consternation, was also a source of mystery. If Stan Crenshaw wasn't going to move it, then Darcy figured she had the right to at least see what was inside. Flick dangled the keys between them. Okay, but we can't turn on the lights or make any noise. Got it? Got it. And you should probably take your shoes off, Flick said. If Stan finds out we've been in there. She raised a bare foot in the moonlight, and he shook his head in exasperation. Relax, I'll wipe them off, she said, clapping him on the back like an old friend. Already, this was fun. Flick unlocked the door and held it open. As she climbed the steps, the synthetic smell of new leather and carpeting hit her. Wow. Have you guys even used this yet? Stan and my mom are supposed to take it to Maine later this summer. Darcy walked down the narrow aisle, feeling like she was in a high-end kiddie clubhouse. I think even my dad would appreciate this, she joked, running her hands over the burnished wood tabletop in the kitchen. Flick made a noise. Probably not. No, probably not. Beyond the kitchen and dinette was a sitting area with a long leather sofa, two side chairs, and an overhead TV. What's in the back? She asked. The master bedroom. Oh. Darcy sat down on the sofa. No need to give him any ideas. Flick took a seat next to her. It was so quiet in the dark RV with the door closed, the peepers and all the night noises shut out. Suddenly, she had no idea what to say. Her palms started to sweat on the leather sofa. So did Adam get his job back? She was touched that Adam was the first thing he wanted to talk about. No, my parents are butting heads over it. My dad is still trying, but I guess the board has to meet with about it or something. That's stupid. I know. I said it already, but it was nice of you to check on Adam like that. He doesn't usually like talking to new people. Flick laughed softly. I don't think he did. No, Darcy assured him. Believe me, that was Adam not minding. Well, it was no big deal. I felt bad. I talked to Spencer about it after. I'm hoping he'll say something to his dad. Even in the shadows, she could see Flick tilt his head back and smile. I'm sure they will solve everything. She was reminded of the night in the golf cart. Why do you hate him so much? Flick looked over at her. Why did you ask me out here tonight? He had her. If she was completely honest, she'd had to admit that she didn't know herself, that she'd hope on some level to seeing him might answer that very question, among others, like why she thought about him and why she felt safe enough with him to talk about Adam and her parents fighting. I heard you guys joined the club, she said instead. My mom and Stan did, yeah. Not you? She was surprised at his lack of enthusiasm. I thought that would be a big deal. Hey, big deal, he snorted. Like, I'm lucky I got in? That was a low blow, but she could send it back to his court. Lucky how? Come on, Darcy. I'm not some preppy rich kid. Neither am I. But she hit a nerve and Flick was on a roll. I'm from Queens. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and I'm not white. You need to relax. I meant it would be a big deal because you seem to like it there, and you're new in town. Why was it they seemed to argue every time they talked? She couldn't imagine a single thought she argued with Spencer about, besides what his dad did to Adam. I don't care about belonging to the club, he said finally. I know you think I should. I don't think that at all. I don't belong. Your dad is the president, she laughed. It's just his job, she let this sink in. My dad works there. I work there. Until a few days ago, Adam worked there, too. We're the staff. You're the member. So now, who's the rich kid? Flick grew quiet. Sorry, I guess I assumed it was different for you. President is a step up from kitchen help. You guys live in the same neighborhood as I do, and you're always at the club. Or, it seemed like... Yeah, well, a lot of things seem other than they are. You don't seem to like the club, Flick said. And you quit golf, so why do you work there? Where to begin? Sure, she hated Mayhaven, but not for the reasons he seemed to. I needed a summer job. There are a lot of places you could work, Flick studied her in the dark. I don't think you hate it as much as you say you do. Oh, I do. But even as she said it, Darcy felt the effort it took. It was the hating part that took the most out of her, because the truth was that mixed in with all the anger was so much of her history, so much of it good, and hating your history required you to hate a part of yourself. But I didn't always, she admitted softly. Did you ever try to forget something bad from the past? Flick leaned in. Tell me more. Darcy didn't have words at first, but then came to her like a rainfall on a summer night, a gentle pitter-patter followed by a storm surge. She told Flick how all her childhood birthday parties were held at the club beach and how Mosimo made her a three-layer princess cake at least 5 years in a row, even though he said he didn't bake cakes for anyone, ever. That when she was 8 years old, she learned to waltz at the 4th of July dinner dance when grumpy old Neiman Shrive, who was much less grumpy then, held her hands and let her place her flat feet atop his and sailed her around the dance floor. She told Flick about the time she was learning to drive, and her mother gave her a parking lesson in the club lot. But she accidentally hit the gas instead of the brakes and ran over an entire stand of golf bags, and how last summer she and Lily snuck a bottle of wine and got drunk for the first time, and Lily dared her to jump naked off the docks, and how some of the caddies came down to get stoned and she had to run into the woods naked while Lily snuck back for her clothes. As the story spilled from her mouth, Darcy told Flick that it was impossible to untangle the good stuff from the bad stuff. And if she couldn't do that, she feared she'd be carrying all this hate around with her for the rest of her life. Flick listened hard to all of it. She could feel it in the way he leaned forward as she spoke. She could sense it in the weight of his gaze. And though she could only imagine what it was he was thinking of her now, what a relief it was to hold it out there between them and know that he saw it. He saw all of it, which meant he saw her. When she was done, she collapsed back against the sofa, waiting for him to say something. Darcy, those are all good memories. She shook her head. She hadn't told him all of them. You know what I think? What? She was almost too scared to know. Your family belongs to a place more than the members. You're kind of like lifers. Lifers, she repeated. He'd gotten that part right. So where's the bad? Golf, she said softly. Golf was where it went bad. Suddenly she was so tired and the hour so late. Was the pressure too much? She could tell. He was struggling to make sense of it. It wasn't his fault. She was giving him dots to connect. But not all of them. It was too much, she admitted. What she didn't admit was that they were talking about two very different kinds of pressure. Flick edged closer on the sofa. It was chilly inside the RV. She could feel the warmth of Flick's skin bridging the space between their bodies. This close, he smelled faintly of soap and citrus. She had the inexplicable urge to rest her head on his shoulder. She had the feeling he wouldn't mind. Did Flick want more, she wondered, or had she used up his patience with all her talking? Teenage boys were like a hot flame with a short burn time. By the time you figured out if they even liked you, they already lost interest. She wanted to think Flick was different. Flick wrapped his fingers gently around hers, and a current passed through her fingertips. For a second, she wished he'd pull her to him. She felt like this was just one conversation of many she wanted to have with Flick Creevy. Darcy, I like you. She smiled in the darkness, but didn't say anything. She was out of words. Last week, you asked me to steal a golf cart with you, but then it seemed like I made you mad. Just the other day, you accused me of upsetting Adam, but then you kissed my cheek. His voice was somewhere between whisper and song, like the state between drifting and sleep. She felt her eyelids flutter. I like you too, she said. It doesn't always seem like it. It was a fair thing to say. She was all over the place this summer, and she knew why, even if she couldn't tell him. I'm sorry, she said. I'm not really myself lately. So why didn't you ask me out here tonight? Darcy could not explain why she kept coming back to Flick Creevy. Despite her crush on Spencer, despite the fact that she and Flick were so different. It was feelings she could not put words into, but it was a simple truth. Because you listened to me. Flick nodded as though this was enough. He squeezed her hand. All right, then let's keep talking. You have been listening to The Backyard Bookshelf, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or Braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Joanne, and thank you for listening.
Audio Journal, the radio reading service of Central Massachusetts, serving visually and print-impaired listeners since 1987. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
This is not a public service announcement. This is a one-minute mystery.
Here's a quick math puzzle for you. How many 3-cent stamps are in a dozen?
And here's the solution to our mystery.
While many people will answer 4, of course, there are really 12 3-cent stamps in a dozen.
And now back to our regular programming.